Okay, Hanukkah Sameach to everybody. I'm going to start with a quote that one of the things that I do in the as director of Rav Kook's archives in Beit HaRav Kook is look at old newspapers and find interesting things that have been totally forgotten. Today you can find a lot of things online. You don't even have to go to microfiche or a microfilm in libraries. And the following is a quote that that appeared in the Jewish Chronicle, the large Jewish newspaper from England. And it appeared in September 9th, 1935, which is exactly the year, the month that Rav Kook passed away. So after someone passes away, they like to interview people. And interesting enough, one of the people who had known Rav Kook is the sculptor Abraham Melnikov. Being that I'm not into the arts, I checked up, and yes, he is a very famous, world-famous sculptor. And he quotes Rav Kook as follows. When I lived in London, Rav Kook was stuck in London during World War I. He went to participate in the Agudat Yisrael convention to try and convince many leading rabbis to join the Zionist movement. Unfortunately, the convention wasn't held because right before the convention was supposed to begin, World War I broke out. And for 5 years, Rav Kook was not able to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And he was stuck first in Switzerland, afterwards in England. And this is what he writes from England. When I lived in London, says Rav Kook, I would visit the National Gallery, and the paintings that I loved the most were those of Rembrandt. In my opinion, Rembrandt was a saint. When I first saw Rembrandt's paintings, they reminded me of the rabbinical statement about the creation of light. When God created the light, it was so strong and luminous that it was possible to see from one end of the world to the other. And God feared that the wicked would make use of it. What did he do? What did God do? He hid it for the righteous in the world to come. But from time to time, there are great men whom God blesses with a vision of the hidden light. I believe Rembrandt was one of them. And the light of his paintings is that light which God created on Genesis Day. Now, this is an unbelievable quote. And, you know, even if you want to take 50 or 60 or 70 or even 90% off of the quote, to have a first-rate Gadol Ador like Rav Kook appraise Rembrandt as a tzaddik and say that he had a vision of the light of Maaseh Bereishit of Genesis, you won't find too many Gadolei Hador who speak like that. We see here from other places that Rav Kook had an appreciation for the secular world. And accordingly, his ideas have a lot to bring to modern Orthodox or religious Zionist people. And actually, if you were to ask me, I would say this topic of the relationship between Judaism and the West, Rav Kook calls it Greece or the Western world, what we call today, is one of the central topics in the thought of Rav Kook. Now, I would also say that about more than 100 other topics, because Rav Kook wrote a lot, but this is definitely one of his favorite topics. And what we're going to do today is I just chose highlights of several different ideas of how Rav Kook gives us practical suggestions regarding the who, what, where, how to blend the good from the Western world, from Greece, and Judaism. So we start out with, I brought for you, let's go into the share screening. In the topic, Rav Kook often quotes the Pasuk from Sefer Bereishit, that's in chapter 9, Pasuk Yud Zayin, that Yafeh Yafyuto Shel Yefet Bo'alei Shem. That the beauty of Yefet, we remember that Noach had three sons, Shem, the father of the Semites, that's us, among others, and Ham, the father of the Africans, and Shem, and Yefet, the father of the Greeks, the Europeans. He actually was the grandfather of Yavan, which is the term used for Greece. So it says, not in Chazal, but in the Torah itself, that the beauty of Yefet, of the Greeks, of the Western world, should be inside the tents of Shem. Now we know that the tents refer to the Torah, that Yaakov is Ishtam Yoshev O'alim, sitting in the tents, and Chazal explained that he's learning Torah. We're going to go on in the soon and explain what is this concept of the beauty in the tents, and what to adopt and what not to adopt. So let's get into it. Source number one, again, we're going to be foreshadowing a lot, and what I chose are quotes that Rav Kook summarizes maybe here, but he elaborates in a lot of other places. So in Igrota Re'iyah, in letter Taf Tzadi Gimel 493, Rav Kook is writing in a letter to Dr. Aleph Kaminka. Aleph Kaminka, Avram Kaminka, was a famous author. And Rav Kook wanted to encourage him and many other authors in his time to use literature to help Am Yisrael. In the time of Rav Kook, again, we're going back about 100 years, when the national revival of the State of Israel is just beginning, the Zionist movement is beginning, and Rav Kook sees secular knowledge, including science, including art, including music and literature, as important parts that any nation needs. And he writes as follows. Ki yesh koach rav b'sifrut. Maybe I'll mention parenthetically, I had the merit, the zchut, to publish Haskamot Re'iyah. Rav Kook, in addition to everything else, was one of the most prolific book reviewers in the world of his generation. We found more than 400 haskamot, and in a lot of them, Rav Kook actually deals with the content and relates, agrees, disagrees, etc. So here he writes, "Ki yesh koach rav b'sifrut mekorit shelanu le'aged elenu et kol ha'pizurim." Literature has the power to bring people back to the fold. Asher nafotsu mi'itanu, who were spread out from us, bi'itya shel yafyuto shel Yefet, because of the beauty of Yefet, of the Greeks of the Western world, shitpartza bepeta b'shetav shel zerem letochu genu. Here Rav Kook is mentioning suggestion number one. Don't let the Western world overpower us. Don't take it all in. And don't let it come in as a super force, but to take it in little by little, and in a critical way. You can't just say Torah umada, Torah in modernism, Torah in secular knowledge, because there are certain things that we know are problematic for Jewish belief. And so Rav Kook is saying, first be critical, and the only way to be critical is to let it in slowly but surely. This is the famous last 3 years we've been talking a lot about vaccines, and this is the famous shita of the vaccine. How does the vaccine work? Maybe there are doctors here who know better than I, but in a nutshell, you take a little of the virus and you put it into the body, and that activates the antibodies to overcome the virus, so that the virus won't overcome the healthy body. And then afterwards, once, if a person comes in contact with somebody with COVID, with corona, because his antibodies have already learned to deal with the problematic virus, it's not a problem. So Rav Kook is telling us in general that to start out, you know, the easiest way, and this was the predominant answer in Europe, most of the rabbis at the turn of the 20th century, and in the Haredi community until today, where the easiest thing is just to say, no, no, no. Don't go to university. Don't use a computer. Don't use internet. And what Rav Kook is saying is that Davka, it is good to take from the good from the Western world. And part of the idea is that it will help us not be blown away by the problematic aspects of the Western world. Okay? So that is point number one. Let us go back to the share screen. Source number two. Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, who was privileged to learn 5 years from Rav Kook in the Merkaz Harav Yeshiva between 1930 and 1935, Tafresh Tzadi to Tafresh Tzadi, hey? And in his Sefer Moavei Re'iya, he writes, brings a lot of things that he heard orally from Rav Kook, but are not found in Rav Kook's books. And here he writes as follows. Hamigama habrura shel chachmei ador. The clear goal of the wise people of the generation, hayta lahachdir tatochen shel kidusha bechol hadargot ubekol shitchei hachayim. This is a common motif throughout the writings of Rav Kook. And anybody who's learned a little Chassidut knows that the Baal Shem Tov is very fond of saying, and we actually mentioned this last week, and it's really in Chazal. Our sages say, Lit atar panui mine. No place should be void of godliness. And the idea is there is one God, one creator, who created the physical and the spiritual. He created the body and the soul. He created this world and the spiritual world. And as we spoke about last time, in the context of the importance of physical strength in the writings of Rav Kook, Rav Kook writes that the ideal Jew, as we see in the Tanakh, is not an absent-minded professor or a space cadet, but the ideal Jew is nefesh bri'ah beguf bari, just like the Kuzari says, a healthy soul in a healthy body. And so the idea of Judaism is not to say, no, no, no. That's not original Judaism. That may sound familiar from a Catholic priest who wants to become a priest. He has to take the three oaths of poverty, chastity, and obedience, which is basically saying that the way to deal with these loaded topics is to stay away. And Rav Kook mentions, le'umat ha'hityavnut, as opposed to the Greek or the Hellenist way of thought. Shepagam b'yisoda emunah v'gazru kidvu lachem al keren ashor she'en lachem chilek b'elokei Yisrael. The Rav Kook here, by the way, I can just picture Rav Kook as a darshan. This is the type of idea that you would hear orally, but not necessarily in writing. Rav Kook is going to combine two gemarot, and the outcome is very beautiful. The famous Midrash in Bereshit Rabbah tells us that the Greeks made the Jews chisel on the, or write on the horns of the ox, She'en lechem chilek b'elokei Yisrael. We have no share in the God of Israel. And the obvious question is, why, what is the idea of the Greeks? And why davka on the horns of the ox? Now we know that the ox in the olden days was the tractor. And it's symbolized also in Kabbalah, the idea of parnasa, of livelihood, of money. So the Greeks wanted to show the Jews that the physical world is the physical world. Don't bring godliness into the physical world. Don't mention God on your tractor. V'shelo lahazkir shem shamayim, not to mention God's name. Now, notice, what did the Maccabees do as opposed as the contra to contradict this? Hichlik beit adin shel hachashmonaim. Rav Kook is quoting a Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Chet, that the Sanhedrin, the Beit Din of the Maccabees, decreed the exact opposite. Lahazkir shem shamayim gam b'shtarot. So that even when you make a monetary transaction, you have to mention God's name. Many say that this is the source of today. Many people write at the top of the letter or the top of any kind of a document, Bet Hey, Be'ezrat Hashem, Baruch Hashem, B'siyata Deshmaya, Bet Samech Dalet. So what did the Maccabees want? As opposed to the Greeks who said, we don't want you to mention God's name on anything physical, or in the words of the Christians, right? There's a verse in what they call the New Testament. Give unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is his. In other words, what is Caesar's? Caesar basically includes all 6 days of the secular week. And so where is God's portion? In church on Sunday mornings between 9 and 10:30, that belongs to God. But everything else is Caesar's. And Rav Kook goes out of his way in many places to say that Judaism says the exact opposite. Yes, in democracy, it's good to have a separation between church and state, but not in the context of, if you look in the Rambam, in Hilchot Melachim, the leader of the kingdom of Israel is supposed to be religious. And the Rambam brings down, we have laws of how to make our economy moral and godly. We have laws how to make our army moral and godly. We have laws how to eat morally and godly, and how to dress properly, and how to speak properly, and that we all know. But Rav Kook broadens this to also include the national aspect. Because again, let atar panui minei, there is no place void of God, doesn't mean just that God has no body. And as they say in Chabad, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. But the idea is that we have to reveal godliness in each and every person, in each and every topic. And therefore, to ignore the secular world is not Judaism. The whole idea of Judaism is, as opposed to Catholicism or as opposed to the Greeks, davka to reveal godliness even in our monetary transactions. Again, to mention God's name, even when you're writing a bill. Hainu lachnis zerem shel kodesh gam b'chayei hachol. To bring a stream, to electrify with holiness, even the life of the secular. Lashgir et yesod ha'emunah gam b'masav matan shel kinyanim chomriyim. Again, as opposed to the Greeks who said, don't bring the God into the physical world right on the ox. We have no share in the God of Israel. We, Davka, want to bring God into the physical world. Anyone who's learned the Rambam knows that the Rambam goes ecstatic over these three words. Also in Shmona Prakim, also in Hilchot Deyot, the Rambam says, our rabbi so ingeniously summarized all of life and all the world and all of Judaism in three words. Bechol drachecha da'ehu. Know God in everything that you do. Again, on the individual level, in the physical level, in the national level, in everything. Ubederech zo te'ir ha'ora tahor bechol pinat chayim. Notice, Chazal relates to Greece as choshech. Right? There are four kingdoms, and Greek is likened to darkness. On the other hand, Am Yisrael is likened to light. And the whole idea is, me'at mina or doche harbe mina choshech, that even a little light can light up a dark room. And so here we have an important point, davka on Hanukkah, davka understanding the difference between light and darkness, between Israel and the Greeks. Ulechol bnei Yisrael haya or b'moshvotam. And Rav Kook is beautifully, poetically saying that just like the Egyptians, they were living in darkness, but the Jews, even during Makat Choshek, during the plague of darkness, they had light. Okay, let us go on. Maybe I'll just mention one other point, which is important on this topic. We know that the Greeks, as we said before, said the physical is the physical. And they praised the physical So much so, we know that the Olympics began in Athens. And not only that, but they wanted to flaunt. The Olympics were carried out without clothing. And one of the problems that the Jews had is they didn't want Jews, or the Jews were embarrassed, or maybe it was both, to participate in the Olympics because they were circumcised. And everyone was in the nude. And part of the idea that Rav Kook mentions many times, again, already in the heading that I brought, that the beauty, that the beauty of Greece is good, but it should be inside the tents. Right? When you mix the beauty of the Western world with the ideology of the Torah and also cover it up properly for the right time in the right place, then you can appreciate the beauty properly, but not how the Greeks used it. Okay, so that's another point. Point number three. Rav Kook writes in an article, HaKodesh VeHachol. This is found in Mamarei Re'ia, which was also an oral speech that Rav Kook gave at a kenes, at a, a convention of writers. Rav Kook wanted to start a movement of writers who would use literature and the pen to express great, holy, idealistic ideas. And he calls it HaKodesh VeHachol. And here again, we have this central topic to Rav Kook, how to relate the relationship between the holy and the secular. Piska Yud Gimel. Me'et asher hizdavgu chokhmat Yavan liYisrael. From the time that the wisdom of the Greeks came into Israel and came to join us, Hechel hachol lavo bigvul hakodesh, secularism, the beauty of Yefet, of the Greeks, started coming into the holiness. Umemele gam hakodesh ba bigvul hachol. And accordingly, the holiness started appearing in the secular. This idea that as soon as a pipe is open means that inevitably it's going to be a two-way pipe. And here, let's jump for a second to source number 9, where Rav Kook talks even more explicitly about this idea in a very interesting context. Rav Kook writes in Orot HaKodesh, Chelek Dalet, page Taf Tzaritet, 499, Hagana b'chesed el elyon, the need to protect chesed, the midah of kindness. Netiyota chesed tzricha hagana gdola. The tendency for kindness, anyone who's dealt even a drop with Kabbalah knows, actually a pasuk, that each one of the forefathers is represented in one of the 10 sfirot, and the midah of Avraham is chesed la Avraham. Avraham, we know, was very kind. And Avraham was very careful to machnis orchim, to host Bedouins. And he goes out of his way to be melamed zchut, to that God should judge favorably the people of Sodom v'Amorah, even though they were evil. And Avraham goes out of his way to save Lot. In other words, Avraham is a very chesed, big Baal chesed. But the problem is that this chesed, inevitably, if you're a nice guy, which Avram was a nice guy, you are kind to other people and you want them to be kind to you and you're friendly to them and they're friendly to you. And accordingly, Rav Kook is pointing out that Avraham, Tzricha Hagana Gdola, out of the three fathers, Yitzchak does not need Magen Yitzchak. We don't say Magen Yaakov. The only one who needs that shield is Magen Avraham. And Hashem tells this to Avraham, Anochi Magen Lecha, I will protect you. Why does Avraham need protection? Because we want to be an Or LaGoyim. Just like Avraham Migayeret HaGvarim V'Sarah Migayeret HaTanashim, Avraham used to convert the men, and his wife Sarah converted the women, because the whole idea of Am Yisrael is typified by this idea to bring monotheism and morality, goodness, tzedek u'mishpat, justice and righteousness, to the world. Now, if we want to be influence other people to come close to Torah, obviously we're going to be friendly. And obviously the pipe is going to be open for two ways that they can then influence us as well. Somebody who is friendly and does chesed, and he is influencing other people, liyot gam ken mekabel mikol, is the most natural thing for him to accept from other people. I want to give you a gift for your birthday. Somewhere along the line, there's a good chance that you would give me a gift for my birthday. Kachi darkashil hashpa'a. This is the way that influence works. It's a two-way street. It's a two-way pipe. She chozeret el anoten be'ezet surah mushpat. The problem is, look at most of the Jews around the world. If the Jews are 2% in America and are less than 1% in South Africa and in England, what's happening is inevitably, instead of us influencing the Gentiles are influencing us. And that's what's called assimilation. So Rav Kook is saying, this is, yet have to be aware, you have to be on our guard, because Davka, because of our willingness and desire to be connected with the rest of the world, you have to be careful what to accept and what not to accept. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook used to say in French, I don't speak French, but used to say, division, c'est pas séparation. Division is not separation. The fact that we have a mechitza, a division between men and women in a shul, that doesn't mean that they're separated, but there's a time and a place for everything. The same thing, we want to have a connection with the Western world. We want to have a connection with the Eastern world, but that doesn't mean that we want to marry them. That doesn't mean that we want to be influenced by the problematic aspects. And if so, Rav Kook goes on to say, V'chol ha-rishon gulagni rak megabel v'lo mashpat, yesod birya kala dema'alna itla u'mafakna letla. There is the Gemara in Masechet Gittin, talks about a grasshopper who eats but does not put out waste. And the idea is that this is not a normal being. A normal being also eats and also puts out. This we know, Rav Kook actually brings this in our context regarding the laws of kashrut. Kibol o kach polto. That just like a pot absorbs, say, something non-kosher through boiling, the way to kasher it, the way to take the non-kosher out, which was swallowed in the pot, the way to bring it out is also through boiling. And if something was roasted in a pan without water, the way to kasher it is to roast it through libun without water. In other words, the way that something comes in, that is the way that it goes out as well. And accordingly, Abraham uftach b'magen. Hashem promised Abraham and also his successors that he is going to protect us. Hashem is going to protect us because, again, we want to have a connection with the rest of the world. We want to influence the rest of the world. Inevitably, that means that they will influence us on certain things. But we want to just adopt the good without the bad. And muchrach lehishamer, we have to be on our God. And Rav Kook goes on there to say that we also have to daven, that we should take the good and not take the bad. Okay, so this is another point. Getting back to source number 3. Here we go. 3 Aleph. In the second line. Ela ha-mechabrim asher chibru et erkei ha-chol ve-erkei ha-kodesh yachad b'chibur shel irbuvia. But those who mixed together the holiness and the secular, she-kavanatam hayta la-sot shalom ben ele shnei amudim, garmu l'chol otam milchama ha-arura. Rav Kook goes on to see, we'll see it later, that maybe we'll just jump down there. And now for a second, in source number 4, where Rav Kook in this context mentions very often, let's see, in source number 4, the concept of lahavdil ben hakodesh uben hachol on 4 bet, right? To divide between the holy and the profane. Now, what is the idea of division? We know that even between Shabbat and Yom Tov, when Shabbat goes into a holiday, we even make a bracha of lahavdil in kodesh lekodesh. Because even within Kiddusha, havdalot, the different levels have to be clear. The Jewish people are all holy, but within the Jewish people, there is Shevet Levi. And within Shevet Levi, there are the Kohanim. Within the Kohanim, there is the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. In other words, even when you're talking about Kodesh, Shabbat has one level of Kedusha, Yom Tov has a lower level of holiness. So the idea, if between different levels of holiness, we have to make these divisions, how much more so between Kodesh and Chol? And that is why Rav Kukra explains why when we have Kiddush, what does Kiddush? Kiddush is to make holy. But Kiddush, we say at the beginning of Shabbat, which is totally holy. What is the last thing that we do at the end of Shabbat as we enter the transition of the secular weekday? We say, Lahavdil ben Kodesh Lechol. And even if Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch spoke about Torah in Derech Eretz, Torah and the way of life, Rav Kook is saying that doesn't mean that they are equal. And when Rav Soloveitchik talks about Torah umada, he doesn't believe that they are equal. Obviously, Torah is in a league unto itself. When you learn biology, Rav Soloveitchik agrees with Rav Kook that it's important. But you don't make Birchot HaTorah before you read history, before you read biology, right? Birchot HaTorah, the bracha before learning Torah, that is on a level of Kedusha. So even if the secular is good, don't mistake it and get to, again, what Rav Kook called in source number 3, Irbuvia. The problem, Irbuvia, is the to mitashtesh, to mix up the Kodesh and the Chol. Now, what is this idea of Tishtush and the problem of Irbuvia, of mixing them up? I actually learned this from my 4-year-old daughter, my daughter Ashira, when she was 4. My in-laws were coming in from the States to Israel. And when Saba and Safta, when Bobby and Zadie come in once a year, obviously they bring toys. I actually have a niece who once thought that America was the name of a toy store. So they bring toys. And my mother-in-law asked my wife, what should I bring to Ashira? So she likes coloring. My daughter says, bring her a box of crayons. Now, my wife had in mind a box of 8 crayons that we had as children, Beating and Smith crayons, if some of you may remember. And but my mother-in-law walks off the plane with a box of, it's still Binny and Smith, but 120 different crayons. Now, I didn't know that there were 120 different colors. I happen to be colorblind, but, and what does a 4-year-old do with 120 different colors? So she asked for a page. She has a little coloring table in our living room, and we were sitting with my in-laws in the living room, we catching up. And we're enjoying seeing my daughter making a design. Little girls take their designs very seriously. And she takes another color, and then she takes another, and she's in seventh heaven. And after about 15 minutes, though, she cries that she doesn't have any more room to draw. Not only that, her page is basically black. So we all laugh. We bring her another page, and Ashira, she has another 100 colors to use, and she tries them all out one at a time. And again, after another 15 minutes or so, she starts crying because, again, her page is black. And then I understood why Rav Kook names his books Orot. Just about all of the cookbooks, Rav Kook books, are named the lights of Kedusha, the lights of Ri'iyah, the lights of holiness, the lights of Israel, the lights of Eretz Yisrael. What is the difference between light and Choshech, between Israel and the Greeks? All right, we learned in fifth grade that if you take a piece of glass or even a transparent pen and you look at the light, you see that light is comprised of the different colors, right? Red, orange, yellow, green, etc. On the other hand, if you take those same colors and you just mishmash them together, putting one on top of the other, you get darkness. So what is the whole difference between light and darkness? In light, you let every shade express itself in harmony. And each one tolerates the other, as opposed to darkness, which is like Rav Kook writes about communist Russia, where they just shoved everybody into the blender and everybody has to fit into the right mold and everybody has to vote for the same party and everybody has to be a member of the same youth movement. And if you don't fit into the mold, they send you to Siberia. And it's just like a salad. Rav Kook explains this is the key to understanding all of the world. If I make a salad, it's very tasty. But if I take those same vegetables and just throw it into a blender, it comes out nauseating. Why? It's the same contents. But the idea is, if you just throw everything on top of each other, then you really don't enjoy the beauty of anything. Rav Kook says the same thing with music. If everyone sings together, whatever they feel like, whatever they want, whenever they want, you get a total balagan, anarchy. And also to the opposite extreme. If everyone was just to sing, it's boring. But if we were to have a choir and we were to divide into A, C, E together, that's harmony. That's a chord. And this is what Rav Kook is telling us. Don't do irbuvia between Kodesh and Chol. You have to divide and identify what's holy is holy. What is Chol is Chol. That doesn't mean that it's not important. Yes, it is important, but don't mix them. You always have to identify what is the difference between them. Let's go on because we're running out of time. Another important point, I'll go back into share screen, that we see in source Gimel, 3 Gimel. Rav Kook talks about, let's jump down to the end. Ki gam ha-chodesh, ha-kodesh, tsarichu le-simucho shel acho. Holiness needs to be supported by the secular. Now, when Rav Kook says supported by the secular, it's very clear what is the main point. Holiness, Torah, that is the main point. But there's a necessity for the secular. Now, when talking about the relationship between the two, Rav Kook talks about now that Am Yisrael is undergoing a national revival, and we are returning to the land of Israel. Anybody ever see teenage boys who are in their growth spurt eat? Right? I remember I used to have eating contests with my brothers, and I still remember my record was 22 hot dogs, and I didn't even win. My brothers defeated me. We used to really pack it away. Why? Because when your body is growing, that you really need a lot of energy. Rav Kook says the same thing, davka when the Jewish people wants to be revived. When we want to revive the desert of Israel, we want to revive the Hebrew language, we want to revive learning Tanakh, which was neglected for 2,000 years, we want to revive nationalism, we want to revive the Jewish army, we have a lot to revive. So Rav Kook is saying that for 2,000 years, and he mentions this in many places, religious people had a tendency not to be pragmatic. The picture of the typical rabbi he did not work the land. As we spoke about last time, he did not serve in the army. And when the time for Zionism came around, Rav Kook writes that it's actually good, beneficial that Zionism began as a secular movement. Why? Well, there are a couple of points. First of all, Rav Kook says, the secular people did not ask the rabbis, should we wait for Mashiach or should we bring Mashiach? They just rolled up their sleeves and went ahead and did. Because if they would have asked the rabbis would still be debating to this day. And inevitably, yeah, it had to be, Zionism had to begin as a secular movement. Another point that Rav Kook mentions is that religious people, you all remember Karl Marx, right? Famous quote that religion is the opium of the masses. Opium is a drug. And Karl Marx, although he was Jewish, he didn't like religion because he said that religion drugs people from being pragmatic, from being practical. And he said that religious people will say, well, they'll push it off on God. God will help us. Or they push it off to the world to come. It'll be better in the world to come. Or it'll be better in the Messianic era. Or it'll be better in Tchiyat HaMetim, the revival of it. Right? You ever notice? Religious people can push off problems to a lot of different places. Now, Rav Kook points out that a secular person who doesn't believe in the Mashiach, he doesn't believe in the world to come, and he doesn't believe in the revival of the dead, all he has is this world. So a secular person is going to roll up his sleeves and get to work, and that is accordingly why, who began the Jewish army? Well, it was Yosef Trumpeldor, who served in the Russian army, right? That's where he lost his arm. And it was Mickey Marcus, who was a colonel in the American army and a totally assimilated Jew, but he translated the American army into Hebrew. That's what Tzahal is based on. And there was Lord Wingate and, right? Now, we could not expect religious Jews to revive the Jewish army of David and Samson and Gideon and Yiftach, all the heroes of the town. We can't expect religious Jews to do it because they weren't serving in the army. So what Rav Kook is saying is that we need the secular, the world of Yefet, the Greek, the Western world, in order to help support our Jewish national revival, especially today as Zionism is reviving the Jewish people. We are in a growth spurt, which means that we today need the Western support, Western frameworks, Western technology more than ever before. Okay, let us go on. Now we're just going to talk telegraphic because we're really running out of time. Till now, we've basically spoken about what. Now we're going to talk about who. Let's look together, go into the share screen, source number 4, Aleph. Rav Kook makes a very interesting diyuk. He brings the Gemara in Baba Kama, the third line of 4 Aleph. The Gemara in Baba Kama says that Lashon HaGzera, Hazal made a decree, Arur Asher Yilamed et Bno Chochma Yevanit. Cursed is someone who teaches his son Greek philosophy. Rav Kook makes two deductions, two diukim. Number one, why does it say teaches his son? Why doesn't it just say somebody who learns? Apparently, the biggest problem is when you teach your children. And number two, what's the issue of Greek philosophy? Lo katuv asher yilmod el asher yilamed et bino. For an adult who is already set in his ways, who already is connected with the beauty of the Torah and Judaism, he is less endangered by the wisdom of Greece. Chachaminu Akdoshim Hidyaru Ma'od Shema Chokma Hayivanit Tim Shocheta Noar Vitinatek Otom Yamunat Kadosh Israel. Chazal worried more about teaching our children Greek philosophy. Why? Because children are very impressionable. And we all know that anybody who has children at home, even by accident, they can get very easily into problematic websites that we don't want them getting into. And they will be so blown away and so fascinated by these things that they have never seen before that it really is very problematic. And that's why, thank God, technology has come out with Rimon and Netzach. There are all these different filters. And Rav Kook is saying, yes, with children, we have to be that much more careful. I'll already mention, I actually should have brought Rav Kook in one of his zigrot, in one of his letters, somebody asked Rav Kook, maybe we should bring modern orthodoxy to the Haredim. Maybe we should bring the Western world to the closed world of the ultra-Orthodox. Maybe we should bring religious Zionism to Mea She'arim. Rav Kook said, it's not a good idea. Because if somebody is not prepared for the Western world, he is going to be blown away by it. And this is what happened, especially with the Jews from the Sephardic countries, who all of a sudden came from Morocco and Yemen and Iraq, and they came to meet modernism in the land of Israel, and they were just blown away because they were told it's either or. And Torah and the secular world, Judah and Greek, were so far apart, most of them chose the Western world because they were told it's either or. Now, Rav Kook says the same thing regarding the Haredi world. It's better for them to stay where they are, because if we expose them to things that they're not ready for, whether it be anything in the Western world, it really might be very problematic for them. So this is Rav Kook is saying, not every person is the same. We have to be especially careful about young people and especially careful about the Haredim, who are not prepared to meet the Western world. Another interesting point, let's jump to source number 5. Rav Kook writes, 100 years before globalization, he writes about globalization. And here you're going to see something unbelievably ingenious. They say that geniuses are 2 or 3 generations ahead of their time. Well, here we're going to see it. There's a famous Gemara that I'm sure many of you know in Masechet Shabbat, Lamed Gimel Amud Bet, source number 5, that talks about the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai regarding how to relate to the Greeks. A similar question to what we're dealing with today. So Rabbi Yehuda praised the Greeks. He said, Amar kama na'im ma'aseh en shalu mazu. There are many great things that the Romans did, not the Greeks, the Romans. Tiknu shvakim, they built marketplaces, that's Cardo in the Jewish quarter. Tiknu gesharim, they built bridges. Tiknu merchatzot, they built bathhouses. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda is not naive, but Rav Kook is saying there is a time and a place to take the good from the Western world. And look at Rabbi Yehuda. He's in the Gemara. He must be right. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi is also in the Gemara. And when he doesn't make a comment, that means that sometimes it's confusing. It's confusing. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he comes out against the bathhouses and against the bridges and against the marketplaces. And he said all that the Romans did, it was for their own hedonistic physical pleasure and for bad things. Rav Kook in his commentary, Ein Ayan, source number 6, and this is Peret chapter 2, Siman Reishon and Tet. He explains beautifully. I'll do this orally. He says the world is going to be globalized by these 3 topics, which Rabbi Yehuda is correct. They are meant to unite the world to become one happy family. What are the 3 points? Well, first of all, there is the marketplace. Rav Kook explains that the marketplace symbolizes economy. When they're global, there's going to be a global economy. So when it's good for Russia, it's going to be good for America and good for China and also good for Israel. Let's work together. Globalization of the economy. Number 2, the bridges. Rabbi Yehuda praises the Roman bridges. Rav Kook explains the bridge symbolizes transportation. The world is going to reveal unbelievable transportation. I don't know if Rav Kook saw, I know that he didn't see, but if he foresaw the idea of jet setters jumping back and forth from continent to continent, where Rav Kook says, of course, that tourism, that familiarity, that seeing the good in every culture, that is going to bring to globalization and world peace. And point number 3, Rav Kook says, what does it represent? Bathhouses. Bathhouses symbolize health. And if I didn't understand this, the last 3 years helped me understand this. Where today in the globalized world, if there is an epidemic, the entire world suffers, which is problematic. On the other hand, the entire world goes out and looks for a vaccine and looks for a solution. So Rav Kook is saying ingeniously, these three topics are the key to uniting mankind into one big happy family. Again, health, business, and transportation. But notice, what's the common denominator between all three of them? They are external. They're not Greek philosophy. The philosophy of the Western world, Rav Kook goes on to say, Chazal said there's no problem with learning Lashon Yevanit. To learn the Greek language, that's no problem. But to learn Greek philosophy, Rav Kook says, that is a lot more problematic. In other words, the framework of democracy, of the internet, of technology, of health, of all these Western things, that obviously is good. But what is Yafe Yofyo Biefet Be'orlo Shel Shem? Rav Kook explains, first of all, don't leave the nudity outside. Bring it inside the tent. But not only that, but the inner part also has to remain Torah. It has to remain Jewish. In other words, there's a sandwich which surrounds and protects and insulates us. And that's the same idea of the pipe. What is the two-way pipe that Rav Kook spoke about? If you look at an electric wire is insulated on the outside. Inside, there are two or three insulated wires. And each one of those wires have to be insulated. Because if you take a wire cutter and you cut the wire and the positive touches the negative, you're going to short circuit the electricity or chas v'shalom become electrocuted. And this is again where Rav Kook is saying, lavdil ben kodesh l'chol, to differentiate. Yes, kodesh is good. Yes, chol is good. But don't mix them up. Don't throw them all into a blender. Now, the last major point, which we're going to finish with, there's a lot more, but the last major point is, where? We spoke about a lot about what? We spoke about who, but what about where? Let's just see a drop in Rav Kook about this. In source number 10. Sources 10, 11, and 12, if you want to learn the sources afterwards in their entirety, Rav Kook talks about that in Galut, in exile for 2,000 years, we did not live a complete life. Nationalism was not our nationalism. Television in America is not our television, right? Out in exile, like we said before, instead of us influencing the masses, we are such a small minority that the masses influence us. Rav Kook goes on to say we need the home court advantage of living in a Jewish state in the Jewish land. That thus, the Torah Tachayim, the light, the Torah of life, which deals with how to make science holy and how to make poetry holy and how to make Rembrandt holy and how to make the economy holy and how to make the army holy and how to make everything holy, that is the living Torah of Eretz Yisrael. But as Chazal say in Masechet Brachot, that Rav Kook cites very often, Ein makom la'shchina in Galut, the only place that God has is in the four amot of the Beit Midrash, the four amot of Halacha. Because the street is not holy, is not Jewish. The restaurants are not Jewish. The television is not Jewish. The universities are not Jewish. And so we are going to be influenced. Shimuchracha limashech mi eretz ha'chayim. But if and when we are in the land of the living, that is a good solution of how to be part of the Western world. And here again, Rav Kook talks about Haderech Shel Ha'ora, the way of light. Again, the Greeks are called by Chazal darkness. The Torah is likened to light. What so is Galut, Yirmiyahu, and Chazal like in the exile to darkness? And the land of Israel is light. What's another difference between darkness and light, in addition to what we said before? Listen to this. This is an unbelievable mashal. When we all know on Friday nights, sometimes you come into a dark room and you trip over a plant and you trip over furniture. In a dark room, the more furniture and plants that there are, the more you trip. On the other hand, in a light room, the more furniture you have, the more plants that you have, the more beautiful and beneficial it is. Rav Kook explains that in Galut, when we're living among Gentiles, it really is, we can't be naive, it's a lot more problematic to mix with the Western world, because the Western world is not just Western, it's not just secular. It's actually a different religion and a different philosophy. On the other hand, in the land of Israel, when we have the home court advantage, everybody knows that if New York is playing against Chicago, if the game is held in New York, New York is probably going to win, and vice versa. What is the home court advantage? Where you know the court, you know the field, you have the fans behind you. The same thing in the land of Israel, where the average bus driver is Jewish, the average professor in the university is Jewish, the average girl that you meet in university is Jewish. You don't have to be neurotic about assimilation. On the other hand, Rav Kook says, living outside of the Jewish state, he understands people who are neurotic about fear of assimilation. Now, there, the last aspect about this is the Jewish land. Because Rav Kook is not just talking about living in a Jewish state, where again, in the Jewish state, the light, in a light room, you appreciate the plants and the furniture and you don't trip over them as much. But the idea of the land of Israel, particularly, where Chazal tell us that even the physical is holy. The apples are holy. The rocks are holy. The buildings are holy. The language, Lashon HaKodesh, is holy. The army is holy. The people are holy. In other words, the advantage in the land of Israel, in the state of Israel, is another important point. So to summarize, just to summarize all the points that we did in short, regarding the relationship between the Western and the Torah, Rav Kook says, yeah, we're not naive. We know that most of the leading rabbis said just no, no, no. The problem is that is not Judaism. Judaism is out to reveal godliness in every single topic and in every national topic. We said that we have to daven that Hashem should watch over us and protect us, because the two-way pipe means that we want to influence the world, and that also inevitably we are open to influence from them. And we have to make sure it's good influence. Now, what are the conditions? Conditions is to differentiate between Kodesh and Chol, between secular and holy. Also, to differentiate between the framework and the essence, the philosophy, the language, the technology, that's not problematic. What's more problematic is the philosophy. Also, who? Be especially careful about young people who are impressionable and Charedim who are not used to being open, and they'll just be blown away. Where? In the land of Israel, where part of the solution, the real solution to assimilation and adopting the good from the Western world, is living in the Jewish land, where we can go on business trips and we do have a connection with the outside world. But here we're marrying each other. Our culture is Jewish. Tonight, everywhere you turn in Israel, you see Hanukkah and not Christmas. And that is a significant difference. That's in a nutshell. There's a lot more, but we'll go into the chats. Okay. Go to the beginning of the chat. Okay, these are technical. Technical. Christianity also emphasizes to interest God into every aspect of life. Okay, the difference is that Judaism, we actually have a Shulchan Aruch to detail how to make our eating holy. We have laws of how to dress and how not to dress, how to speak and how not to speak, how to run an army and how not to run an army, how to deal in monetary issues and not, how to run an economy and not. That's a significant difference. But as much as the Christians are good, that's good. We're happy. The main difference with Christians is that they were very hierarchical and lacking in learning. At best, we are not hierarchical and emphasize learning. That is our strength as a tiny people in a hostile world. Okay, that's also an important point. Rabbi Schwartz, thank you so much for your illuminating presentation. The ability to read Hebrew, unfortunately, is very basic. Is there a way to obtain an English translation of your documents in order to more fully learn from and review your lessons? Yes, you can find more than 200 classes of mine on YU Torah, and also a couple hundred on Yeshivat Beit El. So most of you probably have heard of YU Torah. And the classes there, by the way, are very concise. They're half hour. So that also is an advantage in terms of we have no choice but really to simplify things very quickly there. Okay, wonderful presentation. Pleasure. Thank you. Excellent class. My pleasure. Thank you, especially when you read Rav Kook's Sfarim, such beautiful writing. Todah Rabah, I need to go now. Please end the meeting when you finish. Oh, that's Shira. That's to me. As you giving the Charedim an easy pass, how do you bring the isolated into the greater, wider world? Okay. Well, it's not simple. And the truth is that the Charedim really aren't interested in listening to people like me or people like Rav Soloveitchik or Rav Kook. On the other hand, I do have to point out, and this is really connected, very much connected with the comment, just about every week in the Rav Kook archives, we have Charedim coming from Mea She'arim, which is just about 150, 200 meters away, and they are very curious, and they ask a lot of questions, and the truth is, I'm not a member of the Charedi world, but it is, there is becoming, it's opening up. My older brother is one of the heads of the National Library in Yerushalayim, and he tells me that it's already been decades that many of the leading rabbis in the Charedi community use computers, use the internet in order to raise their level of writing, of learning, and of teaching. But like we said before, regarding the WHO, they wouldn't let their students do that. And again, it really is a problem, because if somebody is so is surrounded like an etrog, you know, protected, and then all of a sudden, you know, he'll see the light, he'll just be blown away. And it took 30, 40 years for many of the members of the Sephardic community to realize that modernism and Torah don't contradict. And that is what the Shas Party is about. And the Shas Party in general is a lot less closed and a lot less extreme than Agudat Yisrael, than the Lithuanian, or than the Hasidic Charedim. But those are big topics. Okay, wonderful. Sure, thank you. It's my pleasure. Okay. Hanukkah Sameach to everybody. And thanks for joining. Kol Tov. Shalom, shalom.